Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge. Real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On The Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Happy Thursday, everybody. Thank God we made it to another day of being here. We are going to get off started really quickly with our shout-outs to Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 Kiss FM Radio, New York City, currently with iSoRadio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m., again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. And when he's not on the radio, he is Grace in New York with the best of live R&B events as the CEO of Track One Entertainment. To my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, Monster Miles, DJ Domreka, Rodney Williams, and, of course, our great activists and panelists, Deacon Zeddy Williams from Toledo, Ohio, out there doing their thing. Thank you guys for being a marvelous team. To my social media guys, you awesome people, you to On The Edge Listeners Lounge, thank you for all your pre-broadcast topic discussions and your endless support. Black Mamba Group, the Real World Black News and Discussions Group, Black Love and Conversations Group, Black History Suppressed, and the Capitalist End Group. What about us? You guys have been awesome. To my fabulous Starter Five panelists, to Professor Carlton Jones, Hakeem Zayed Bey, Patrick Irvine, Stalo Jenkins, Altariq Atkins, you guys have been marvelous with your support and your contributions to our discussion. And to my favorite twin girls, Darlene and Arlene out there, if you're out there listening, I need you in tonight as well. Okay, we have been going through some major, major topic discussions this week, including the controversy and the verdict for Mr. Donald Sterling. Many of us are on the fence about it. We know that, you know, part of it is empty victory for us in the hole, and we pretty much are taking what we can get. On the other hand, there's other things going on, so we're going to move off from that, because tonight's topic is about another very and most important part of our society, and that's our youth. Tonight we're going to be starting a two-part series on teen domestic violence. You guys have been around for me before when we had the I Love You to Death segment. Tonight we're going to touch on that again, and we're going to touch on it from two different parts. So today, our discussion is entitled Violent Love, Today's Teenage Love Stories, Part 1, How Do We Detect the Signs? That is what today is about. How do we detect the signs in both a teenage abuser and a teenage abuse victim? That is the situation from us as adults, the village, the parents. This is what we need to do, because right now, teenage domestic violence, including fatalities to such, is on a high level. And it's becoming one of the biggest things that's taken our children in death, as well as crimes or anything out there. So that is what we're going to be going on tonight. And you know how this goes? I'm going to go out with our sponsor break and our pre-broadcast song. When we get back, we will get this party started. So here's Jaheim with Just In Case after we're from our sponsors. Be back to get this party started. Don't go away.
I don't make it home tonight, baby.
your hand, never letting go. Let you hold the key to the next. The drive gave you all you need and want as long as I'm alive.
Like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with K.D. Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. KD and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with K.D. Barnett and friends. I'm your host, K.D. Barnett. Okay, discussion time, everyone. This is a topic that we have touched on before. I had many of people that were responding to me, that were speaking, and this is something that we see on the news on a daily basis. We're seeing it on reality TV shows. We're hearing about it in the news, and many of us are actually dealing with it and don't think that there's any help out there. And that is the teen domestic violence that happens with one of the most precious people in our life, our children. So tonight we want to focus from the angle of prevention, or early detection. How do we get to know that our children are in an abusive relationship? Well, first and foremost, one of the things that we can't seem to avoid is that our children are getting into quote-unquote relationships a lot earlier in their ages. It used to be you had to worry about that come 15 to 16, you know, 16 they were actually involved, 17 then they go into 18, the high school years. Nowadays you're talking about elementary children, you're talking about junior high school kids. We've spoken on how modern day parenting is way different from our generation and the generations before us. We have to deal with a whole lot more peer pressure on a whole different scale these days. Our children are coddled or supported by laws that say they don't need to come to their parents for birth control. They no longer have to consent to get an abortion. They can get pregnancy tests, and the parents can't say anything. But should that pregnancy or abortion go bad or the birth control message have an adverse effect, they can't be treated medically without a parent's consent. Go figure. Well, let's speak about this. We see what domestic violence does to people who are supposed to be mature enough and mentally stable to be able to know what it is and address it and deal with it. And we've seen how many victims stay in it. You guys have heard my story. There's been several things that we spoke about, how people tend to look at a victim and not understand why they stay. We spoke about that. We spoke about what victimization is. Panelists, I see you there. I'll call you in just a bit. There are certain things that happen that adults can't handle. So imagine what happens with the child that's dealing with unpopularity, that's dealing with now they got a single parent that has to be out of the house most of the time. Most of the time when the parent gets home, as much as they try, they really don't have the time or the fatigue level is too high to deal with every aspect of what's going on with them. Children nowadays are not coming to their parents as quickly to talk about their day or what they're going through because they feel parents don't understand. That's the age-old teen-to-parent universal fight. They think we're aliens, like we were born as adults and we don't know what it's like to have a zit or be unpopular. These are the things that we as parents have to learn on top of parenting them, how to bridge that gap. But nowadays, there's other factors involved that's more bold and more luring to our children, such as the media, such as peer pressure, such as cops now no longer being the protective force they once were intended to be, such as now the people that were in place to be protective of your children and keep them children until they're supposed to grow, no longer are that. Now they are culprits. Now there are teachers having sex with their underage students. Now you have priests that are being arrested and involved with scandals. Now you have cops that while they're trying to arrest the rapist perpetrator, they're becoming rapists themselves. So there are plenty of things we are dealing with in that. So, but the question is, today, how do we detect the signs in our teenagers? How do we detect the signs? How do we realize if either our child is an abusive person or an abuse victim? Well, according to some research and, of course, common sense, there's a couple of things that we can see. Well, the obvious, of course, is if you saw physical signs. But physical signs doesn't always happen, and they're still an abuse relationship. So first and foremost, what do we look for when there's no physical scars, when there's no black eyes, when there's no busted lips or broken arms? Let's try starting out with the reasons why our children would be lured into this. What would be reasons that they would be attracted to someone who may start out good but wind up distributing signs, displaying signs of behavior that are not healthy to what love is supposed to be? Well, let's start with this. Definitely a common thing or most obvious thing would be the child has no guidance at home. Maybe they don't have parents that are there all day. They don't have both parents in the house. They have to pretty much raise themselves because mom or dad has to work most of the time. And people around them, what if they're not the most popular teen on the block? What if there aren't neighbors that are there to help rear them? Well, they don't have a child care person that's in place to follow mom's or dad's rules while mom or dad is out of the household. That's one thing. So they're left to the devices of social media, of TV media. They let the devices of what their peers say could happen, and if there's another set of kids around them that they're associated with that don't have parental guidance, that might be it. They're feeling of inadequacies and insecurities, and they're looking for someone to fill that void. Witnessing abuse from both angles. If they had an abusive father and the mom was submissive, that's what they grow up to repeat if they're abusers, or that's what they will grow up to repeat as a victim. Same with the father being abused by a woman. And all of you who listen to me on a weekly, daily, whatever basis it is that you do, you know I don't advocate for women simply because I'm a woman. If it's wrong, it's wrong. If it's right, it's right. So there are women abusers out there as well. There are women that are out there teaching our daughters, you take a man for everything he got because he'll do this in a minute and everything. We know that's the wrong way to be, but this is what we are developing with that attitude. Video games that give you scores and points for how many women you rape or how many people you kill or how rough and tough you are. A game of survival, but a game of survival that is contingent upon how many people you crush down in the process. Music and music videos that's portraying perception of power when a guy is saying he controls the bitch or he's got his honey under check or she keeps it coming because I've got this going. All of these things come up. All of these things lend to a fragile planting ground of our children's minds. No attention. Not getting any attention from anybody. Being unpopular. Being the girl nobody would date or the guy or girls don't find cool. These are things that could lure them in. What brings these people in? Well, this person has been sweet-talking them, telling them how beautiful they are. This person is saying they're cool and that everybody else is wrong for whatever their reasons are. They offer them gifts, probably something that a person in a poor household would deem important because that's what society says. The more you have, the prettier you are, the better you are, the lighter you are. The more you can offer to somebody else is what determines how worthy you are. If you don't have a parent in that household or an adult figure to contradicting that and constantly putting them up with some encouragement, this is what's going to lure them in. And as much as all of you sitting there going, duh, this sounds like common sense, obviously we have an epidemic because somebody took this for granted. Parents really don't know. Some parents don't see the signs. That person winds up becoming their everything. It makes them feel good. This is the way that it goes. If he's not calling me or if he's calling me all the time, it's a reason. It must mean I'm special. Even if it means coming, which hurt. Now let's look at the signs of an abusive relationship from both angles. An abuser showing non-physical behavior. They become super possessive of their partner or jealous. They become demanding and controlling, meaning that they demand something of that person or controlling their every move. If they show up and they're suddenly rebellious to their own parents and then start being rebellious to the parent of the person that they're with, you start noticing that they once had friends, but now they're detached from their friends or none of the friends that used to want to be around them wants to be around them anymore. That's signs of them being mean and abusive or could lead to them being abusive. If you start seeing angry signs, think about it. We spoke about the bullying situation. This all ties in. If you notice that your child is suddenly angrier than ever, they can't communicate anymore. They don't do the things they used to do that was healthy for them. Their social growth has been stunted. Signs from a victim, and these are just a few things on the list of many things that may seem small and unimportant, but wind up being the relevant link. Signs of a victim. The behavior suddenly seems to be determined by what their partner thinks or approves of. They suddenly can't be with their girlfriends or their guy friends. They have to be around this person they're dating. They don't wear makeup like they used to anymore. They don't wear earrings like they used to anymore. They're getting tattoos and they're doing certain things they never would have done before. they're jumpy or fearful if they don't immediately answer the phone call of the person that they're with. They have to get permission to do certain things with their girlfriend or their guy friend, or have to explain that they have to go out with their parents and that's why they couldn't answer the phone. Their inability to think and do things individually anymore, period. They can't just sit and watch a video game for the day. They can't exist if they don't have that partner right next to them, possibly because maybe they just, you know, have the star and glitter in their eyes for this person, or because that person is demanding their time, needing to know every single minute. Why didn't they answer their phone? Where were you? What you doing right now? Why didn't you answer your phone the first time I called? Well, are you cheating on me? You don't know what's going on because our children will not come to us that way. So it's our job to keep our eyes twice as much open. I'm going to bring in our first panelist for the evening, and we will continue the points and observations as we go in. So let's get started with this. 1 second. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, Lady Barnett, and God bless you and your family, and blessings to everybody else that will be joining the panel this evening.
Thank you, Deacon. Now, before I ask for your opinion, you have been on the show before when we had our first last series on this, and you have shared with the listeners then that this is a subject that touches you deeply, and I commend you on that bravery, and I understand just how much that is an issue for you and for your family. So if you don't mind, it would be wonderful if you would be able to give us your opinion from a person that's dealt with it.
Well, first of all, in today's society and with the parents in today's society, they're missing a whole lot when it comes to raising their children. First of all, you have to have a line of communication that is open constantly with your child. You have to always be able to give them the utmost and undivided attention at all times and let them feel as though they can come to you and talk to you about anything. A lot of, well, you know, young people, a lot of times when I was young, you know, I wouldn't be able to come to my mother about certain things, but I would be able to go to my father about certain things. You know, and with today's society today, you have these so-called parents that are either they're out here trying to be their children's friends instead of their parents, or they're busy trying to push them out of the house because they got a bottle or a joint stuck up in their face, or they want to still go out and party, when they don't realize once you have bring children into this world, it's not about you anymore; it's about your children. And you have to constantly let your children know that they are loved, that you really care about them. And if you don't give them that impression, they're going to turn to some other avenue to get it from. And that's really sad when they have to do that. You know, like I lost a niece, Stephanie Wilborn, and I lost a niece, Cree Janae Bell, to violent crimes, from one from the husband and one from a boyfriend. And it's still hard for me to deal with, you know, just bringing it up. And it's just that it's just very sad that a lot of these young people are not given a sense of direction today, because we have, like I said, so-called parents that are not really being parents.
I do know, like you said, you know, you told your story with regards to your nieces, and it was something where a no just wasn't a no.
Yeah.
Once they're involved with you, and, you know, I know husbands tend to do that often, or people you share children with. That always seems to be one of the biggest things with them. You know, they could, you guys have been together, you broke up, and let me not just say husbands, babies, mothers too, and wives as well.
Yeah.
You know, you are done with the person, or for whatever reason the relationship didn't work out. You are far beyond your scope trying to figure out what that previous ex of yours is doing with their life, rather than focusing on how do you continue to nurture and keep your children feeling safe with a breakup. or an upset in the way they know things to be. When that happens, it leads to other things. You're starting to take your sense of entitlement, having once been the main person in that person's life. You can't deal with your mistakes or with your errors or with your bad choices. So you want to try to hang on to a life that doesn't include you anymore. You know, not like, and then what usually happens is when the person can't get the parent, they want to abandon the entire ship, forgetting the fact that it may not have worked out with the parent. But there's still children involved, and you still have to deal with this person. So instead of you focusing on whatever hurt you've got to deal with, whatever anger you have, whatever jealousies you have for the sake of your children, you wind up putting that into a spot that causes danger and more fatalities or more damage to what you should be preserving.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people don't tend to understand that just because you want it doesn't make it your right to have it. Hence rape, hence the domestic violence that happens. And a lot of these children are emerging a lot younger, believing that that's the way they have to be in order for it to be defined a relationship. First of all, 14-year-olds have no business calling anybody boyfriend or girlfriend. Secondly, no child at that age should ever have the mindset to believe that they are supposed to be property or property that are property abuser. Because at that age, you can't even really grasp the concept of what true relationship love means. You understand your feelings, your hormones. You understand what's happening. You understand you may want to see this person all the time. But you can't handle what a commitment is or what a relationship is or what the work in it is past the physical act of sex. And I asked the person, and one of the people that answered the pre-broadcast topic question brought up some very interesting points. And they said they think the older people, a lot of times the women, try to push it out there like, want to cause a reaction from the guy because their angry reaction makes them feel wanted or loved or important. Well, guys do the same. While they're battling their egos at being yelled at or controlled by some woman, at the same time, they are, like, feeling special, like that person wants to know every little thing that they're doing. That's not love. That's not even healthy. If your partner can't go to out on the town with her sisters or her girlfriends or his brothers or his guy friends without you feeling like you need to keep tabs on them or GPS them, then something wasn't right about the trust factor in the first place. However, teens are too young to understand that fact. So without us being around or understanding or seeing the signs to guide them away from it or to keep an enlightenment in them at all times, it's going to wind up that they're going to be either badly injured or dead at the hands of these people they're perceiving to be loving them. That's one of the issues. Now, the other thing that they brought up was they think music is a big part of it. They didn't elaborate or expound, but I understood where it was coming from. Music used to be the universal taming of the savage beast, not with what's right. going on nowadays. Nowadays, right. hip-hop rappers and rap and all these things are out there promoting being in control, beating a person down. Men are talking about how they got their shorty under wraps, how she spreads the legs to do this, how she wants to bling so it keeps her coming, how his penis can swing a certain way and keep her coming, how if it's she knows she'll get the beat down, all sorts of stuff, and they think it's cool because of the beat to it. Video games now for your kids' PS4s and Xboxes and the PlayStations and PSPs are giving kids rewards for shooting people down or raping people. Or beating somebody. There's a series on a game out now, Grand Theft Auto. GTA, for those of you that don't know it by the proper name. They have guys being mobsters. And the best way you get points and get to the next level is by how many guns you can steal, how many people you can run over with your car to get to the next level, how is the best clever way you can escape the cops, how many people you beat down on the street before you jumped into your car and did it again. This has included girls that's been dressed up like hookers. This has been including old people who just happen to be walking the street with their canes. This happens to be babies in strollers. And they get prizes for this. And then the regardless of whether it's for adult only or whatever the case is, don't you think that this is helping to foster that same mentality in a grown person? And while everybody's thinking, oh, it's just fun stuff, it's a little graphic, but it's fun, it's not. Some people, there are grown people that sit in front of these controllers and actually sit there and believe that if they can accomplish something by getting to the VIP score box, that they really can apply that in real life. It sounds cool. The Italians are saying certain things in there. The mob got this guy, the video game got it set up, and all I have to do is click X or R2. You got these wimpy people that's out there in the hip-hop world who dress up like they're big and bad with bling and guns, and that's their stage glitter. And their stage, that's their rapport. That's their gimmick. And they're not giving a damn to come back into society and say, listen, that's all props. You don't do that stuff. Or better yet, take that media to the masses power that you have and use your material to promote positivity. Isn't that what they did in the 80s with rap? Didn't even 90s rap have a message behind it? The family, uplifting, using your brain instead of being a drug addict. Showing you how uncool it was to be too cool. You got these children, and that was one of the replies that came in the pre-broadcast discussion today, where they said that she believes the younger children are doing it because it's a fad. And I believe so, too. There are many of things that these guys are coming out talking about, yeah, sure, I got shorty on lock. Yeah, I got this one going. All I got to do is make a call. And meanwhile, when they start looking silly, because a lot of times guys don't, the boys don't like the fact that a girl got tired of it and used her mouth to go back at him, he got to prove it a different way now. He don't know what it means to say no, because while he was trying to impress his friends, trying to be something he really wasn't because he really likes this girl, she done took what he did outside and went with that and made her decision based on that. And it winds up being something like, you know, God help you, and, you know, with that one, your niece or other people. There's a girl, Lauren Ashley. She was out there shot by somebody who supposedly loved her. So parents, what do we do? As busy as we are, as tired as we are, what do we do? There are people there are kids that are out there that they're quiet and they seem to be okay. Some kids act like everything's fine, but they don't want to be a burden because they don't understand that you going through bad things as a teenager is a parent's requirement. We go through this with you. You're supposed to go through this so that you can grow up and know how to handle it and teach the next generation how to do it. But many kids don't, and they wind up either killing themselves or getting involved with something that winds up killing them anyway, be it in spirit or physically dead. And as you said earlier, Deacon, sadly, majority of the younger parents are busy trying to regain what they feel they're missing out on. A lot of times these young kids have had children because the man in their life, the boy in their life, gave them the fairy tale promise of being there for them. But reality hit when the baby came. And there was nobody above them to say, whoa, listen, you played in this shop, you got to clean the shop up. It's scary, I know, but it's a different story now. And like you said, it's not about you anymore. You're not going out there to make that job just so you could get those sneakers you couldn't afford as a kid. You're out there to make sure that your children never goes hungry.
Mm-hmm.
You're out there to make sure that you constantly show your child that even if I'm not making as much as the Jacksons are, I'm working for what and earning what I get. that all these things you can enjoy off of my hard work is just that. It's a privilege afforded to you by what I'm doing. So this is where we're at, and this is one of the things that's failing them.
Yeah.
To those that are feeling, you know, unpopular. This opens up the door to many things. Why some of our girls are being caught into prostitution, abducted into sex trafficking rings. Because they're walking out there. Some of these girls have been shy girls that have dressed, you know, not so cool, and they couldn't fit in. So they've gone out there and tried to do something a little bit daring for the first time in their life. And they feel a little cool with the rush, not knowing that there's somebody out there a lot more experienced than they are. Looking for that kid that's at home with poor parents that can't afford anything, promising them the world, listening to your daughters or your sons talk about the things that they have complexes about, and then zooming in to be the savior of that part. Who told you you weren't pretty? That's not true.
Yeah.
Who says that you're not a cool dude? That's not true. Because girls do it too. Just because the boys were taught that there's not supposed to be wimps about it doesn't mean it's not happening just as much as it is with these girls that we see getting hit and becoming a part of it.
Mm-hmm. You made a point earlier stating that some of these young girls or even the young men don't hear from their own parents that they're a good person, that they're handsome, or they're beautiful, or they're a princess, or they're a prince or a king. You know, they don't hear that enough, but when somebody stranger comes along and puts that in their head, they feel like, wow, nobody ever said that to me before, when it should start at home. You know, and so if somebody, a stranger, comes up to them and brings that to them, it's like, well, you're not telling me nothing I haven't heard. My dad and my mom tells me that all the time, so you're going to have to do better than that. You know, so we have to start getting back to the basics when it comes to our children and be straight up with them, because today's children, they know when you are real with them. Like they say, you know, you have to keep it 100 with them every day. Whenever you have a conversation, don't lie to them. Be as honest with them as you can. You know, don't hold nothing back from them, because that can be very damaging. Once they find out you have lied to them about anything, you can lose them totally. You know,
absolutely.
So it's best to, when you're addressing your children, you have to be truthful and honest with them. You know, come from the heart with them. You know, and they know when you're fake. You can believe that. They know when you are fake. These children that are coming up, and today we were advanced, but the advancement of the children today is, oh my goodness, is off the charts. So you have to be honest with yourself, and first of all, you have to be honest with them. That's where it starts. It has to start at home. So this way you can basically talk to your child about anything. You know, you have to be honest with them. I talk to my kids and my grandkids, and I'm straightforward with them. I tell them, I say, hey, you might be shocked with some of the things you might hear come out of my mouth, but I need to say this to you because I don't want you to be running around here with your eyes wide shut. I don't want that for you. I want you to have your eyes wide open, so when it comes to you, you're going to say, well, yeah, my dad or my granddad told me about this. You know, and that's the way it should be. Like I said, we all have to get back to the basic when it comes to rearing and raising these children today, because they definitely need it. If not, they're going to take on their title as the lost generation, and I don't believe that they are a lost generation. If anybody is lost, it's the elder generation, because we dropped the ball, and some of us are too lazy to bend over and pick it up.
And that's absolutely true. Ben, unless I see you there, I'll bring you in just a minute. That's absolutely true. And what you said about keeping it 100, half of the things you're going to tell them they've seen some way in school anyway. If you are not the person to be just as real as their parent who really does love them from a place of safety and a place of long-term and for the rest of their life, even in death we love our children, we miss them. And that's the thing. If we don't tell them to the third power from what they've already seen in the right way, where they can make sound choices, where they can say, I've seen this already. And like you said, even to, as far as you haven't told me anything I haven't heard, let me tell you something. That's what I try to teach my daughters. That's what I try to teach my sons. I used to role play, especially with them having seen what I had gone through with their own father. There are certain things that I had to sit back and explain. I'm stuck. There are certain things I can't do, but this isn't correct. And that doesn't always work. But you know what? And even in addition to that, there are things that no matter how good and careful you are, no matter how much in your P's and Q's you are, somewhere down the line when they hit that street, there's going to be something you didn't see coming that sparks something in them. But if you have done everything you can, or if you are on top of them, or you try to keep watch of them at all times, somewhere down the line you may be able to detect it. What? And there's still no guarantees that something's not going to happen, because they're still going to make a choice one day that's all their own. Let me bring in our other panelists for the evening so we can get this going. Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Carlos Ellaby Jones, or Stalo Jenkins. Call him
DJ. Hey, Stalo.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
All right, man. Bless you, man.
Hey, Kay. Bless you, too.
All right. Stalo, you work with children, and we have spoken on this previously. We've spoken about it through the time, and we both agreed that it was time to readdress the situation. So, basically, give your feedback. What do you think about the situation? How do we detect the signs of our children being in an abusive relationship, and if we can detect the signs of our child being the actual abuser?
I mean, like you said, I work with children, and I want to start by saying teen-on-teen violence and children and violence among them in itself is just as critical an issue as domestic violence. And the situation is getting younger and younger for people to, if people can start to perceive that the violence with the children is getting younger and younger. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's linked to domestic violence, and it's invariably connected to the example that we're setting, the overall example we set for our children, as well as domestic violence as a whole and the way we have addressed it in society. Now, I'm concerned. Now, what I'm very much concerned with is the lack of energy put forth in the schools to curb, confront, to deal with, and to try to deter violent behavior and, like, bullying and, you know, in doing so in a constructive way. They don't do so. Often bully dynamics are allowed to dominate and control the learning environment. And the teachers are not equipped, you know, to do any more than allow the behavior to escalate, until you have to do a harsh and swift punishment, and then that'll remove one of or several of the students, you know, from the learning environment altogether, the only learning environment some of them have. So at the end of the day, not only within the household are we not addressing it, also outside of the household in, as a whole, you know, we've seen a lot of these YouTube videos and the signs, and we see. It's crazy, because even today I dealt with it. I mean, I don't even want to get into how I dealt with it. It was too much, you know, really. You know, you have no idea how angry some of these, and so many dynamics that fall into play, you know. And, you know, fights in the school is a big, super, you know, obvious sign, especially for females and males, you know, especially if it involves the opposite sex. You know, at the end of the day, in the school, right, a lot of times that stuff is left to fester, allowed to fester, and sometimes even encouraged by adults from time to time. The whole way they have gone about the learning environment has just degraded, right? And the bullying epidemic, it became an issue. Why? Because of the school, because it escalated, you know, to white children killing themselves and so much other things, and black children as well, and people, you know, it led to getting so bad. But this, like, you know, the video game addiction, you know, the obsessions with bullcrap, you know, the promotion, you know. Today we do this and we promote things that's never been promoted before. Children now, for the first time, I feel like in history, I don't feel like we ever did this before, because haphazardly do we send the children to depend on a system that's already spiritually retarded. We know it's retarded. It's bullcrap. They go in there and they get to argue, and sometimes the teacher's too scared to even confront the situation as a professional, and you don't know what's going on in there with the kids. And they go through that every day. So if they see violence at home as well, then that double, you know, and sometimes it's not even, a lot of times, okay, it doesn't even have to be violence at home all the time. So we can't blame anybody, because also, you know, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it's at the school, you know, and you know, it's already a spiritually retarded system, the school in itself. And we've chosen to throw the kids into the system and tell them, choose your own destiny. I don't think we've ever done that before. I feel as though we as a people, or people in general, the civilization, I think we've often guided our children more so than we do today. I think we are even more so obsessed with bullcrap, because I feel like these children now get to go through this school system that's decrepit and choose whatever they like best. And most of them is choosing rap, crap, bull crap. You know, they don't understand nothing, because we're not allowing them to thrive. Okay? You know, but we've guided children better than this in the past. You know, as a people, we have done it. You know, at the end of the day, it's solutions to the matter. It's solutions, you know, and these types of solutions are very much immediate. When we talk about these children, these are overnight. When we talk about the overnight stuff and, like, affecting more than one person on a mass level and starting movements, when we talk about the children, this is what we talk about. When we talk about overnight, when we talk about we want this to happen tomorrow, this is what we're talking about. Because the kids, they move faster than we could ever think.
I agree with you 100%, and everything you touched on is definitely something that emulates all of the changes from then and now. And you spoke about things that we've never done before. Media is doing things they've never done before. We spoke before, I think we made a joke about it, a joke but very serious type thing, where we spoke about how TV shows never would even allow you to see couples sleeping in the same bedroom at one point. Right. I remember looking at I Love Lucy, and they had two separate beds, but yet, you know, Lucy was pregnant with little Ricky. You know, They didn't even speak of pregnancy as the word pregnant even. They would say with child, or she's in a delicate condition, things to that effect. Okay, well, we realize that this is a day and age where all the birds and the bees talk, or the stork bringing the baby nonsense doesn't work. Because while we're teaching our kids that the baby came from a bird, somebody raped them and they're pregnant, so now what? You know, so now what do you do? And when you said, Deacon, that we have to keep it real, that's one of the examples of just that. If they've seen you smoking and you want to sit there and act all up in arms about them smoking, there's a way that you have to teach them now to corroborate the two. To bring them both together so that you could prove your point as to how bad it is.
Right.
And why it is, you know it's bad, because you're not walking this third-party alien, you know, understanding of it. You're telling them because you've lived it and you went through the pain. If you're a former drug addict or an alcoholic that went through rehab and kept your life straight after that, you could tell them, listen, I went through chills. I had bad dreams. There was a time I thought I couldn't live without the pipe. I'm telling you, it's nothing to get started. It's nothing to do, because it's a prison you put yourself into. Now imagine if you're imprisoning yourself and you're controlled by something. Now you're going to have another individual control you? But parents, this tonight is about us. Tonight, adults who don't have children but see this happening, tonight is about us, about our role. We can't count on society to be a village, because that village has been burned up a long time ago. But it was never the village's obligation to do a damn thing. It was always ours when we chose to go through with our pregnancies and have them. And okay, many of us are single parents. It's a hell of a damn messed up situation. But what do we do? Do we keep, do we not do what we have to do because the other person is choosing or getting away with not doing what they're supposed to do? What if that other parent who has walked off closes their eyes, plugs up their ears, or ducks their head in the sand to forget that they have kids? Your child is still growing. Your child is still in need. Your child still needs to eat. Your child still has dues at school. Your child still has needs at school. There's still a parent-teacher conference to attend. It's your job to stand up and to know. We have to know. And a lot of us say that goes without saying. I take care of my child. Understand, even for those of us that do, that try our damnedest to not let anything take away from what we do as a parent, something can slip in. And the least that we can do for our children is to at least give them the foundation of them knowing my mom has radar, and give ourselves the benefit of saying, wait a minute, there's some changes going on in my child. I need to know what's going on. If your child is normally bubbly and happy and always making a practical joke or always doing something silly and you're constantly laughing, and that child's shine in their eyes is suddenly gone, there's a reason. Find out why. Even if they seem like they're pushing you away, you tell them, listen, okay, you're not ready to talk about it, but understand, I know something's going on and I love you and I'm going to address this again. And as you said, Deacon, always let them know that no matter how bad it is, you know, all these, I had, my children just made the real deep teenage years now, and it's like my first run with it. So it was like the other day I had a conversation with the daughter that so far, thank the Lord, that she's not involved with anything sexual or any bad relationships. But I always operate under the possibility that it could always happen, because we've seen it. Many of these parents that have lost their children to this type of thing or that type of thing didn't see it coming because they never expected it could. Not their child. Not because they think their children are angels, but because they figured that they've been doing everything they could, that they don't ignore, that they don't go to sleep without asking about their child's day. It's not always that we're not doing something, parents, but it's always about something. Somebody's always doing something. Somebody else is always doing something. That's what I should have said. So I had said to her, let's have a little talk. Oh, boy, and what are you talking about now, Mom? What's going on? And I said, yeah, yeah, all of that and then some. But I need you to understand, she does have a little boyfriend now. One that I guess, you know, it kills her because I'm like the old-fashioned parent that used to sit in the middle of them watching a video, you know. But it's like this. I said, I need you to understand that Mom is always there and that you can always come to me no matter what the situation is. I need that for you to understand. You are in a generation that is caught between a rock and a hard place. And so this is the understanding I want you to have. No matter how bad a situation is, even if there was something that you got into that you felt you caused to happen, always know that you could come to me, because no matter what it is, I'm always going to be there for you. Understand this. Even if it's something that you did, I'm going to be angry. I will be upset. I may be disappointed, but I'm your mother. I'm going to. Your father, your whoever is in your life, we're going to. You children have to allow us the right to feel that way and understand that after we come to grips with all of it, we're going to have your back. So at any point, no matter how hard it is, no matter how embarrassed you may feel, do understand, I probably have been there, done that. But you have to give me the opportunity to be your parent. That means if I'm upset with you, allow me to say whatever you think it is I'm going to say. Allow me to react however it is you're going to react, even if it disappoints you. Because at some point in time, the fear is going to go, the anger is going to go, the disappointment is going to end, and then I'm going to say, now how do I deal with the situation? Now what can I do for my child in the situation? You have to give us that. And that's what a lot of us parents don't do. Our children are going to assume what they're going to assume because they're kids. But if they ever felt that there would be something that would ever cause our love from them, they're going to go the opposite way. Now, there are plenty of abusive situations where the victim doesn't realize they're being victimized. They misinterpret somebody calling your phone every 15 minutes, somebody saying that they saw you with your friend when they should have been allowing their partner to be out for the night and separate. And that person is going to interpret it as love.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to be at a position with what do we do about that? How do we get them out of it? That's actually tomorrow's topic. Now you know what do we do. But today, how do we get to know? How do we educate ourselves? How do we inform ourselves? How do we become detectives? Now, nobody, I don't care what situation you're in, except for those parents that deliberately are neglecting their duties and don't want to be parents but want to be parents. We know our children better than any doctor, better than any aunt, better than any best friend, better than any teacher. We know our children. We know when the doctors say, you know what, that you don't have to worry about that because, you know, this happens in all kids. Well, my child normally goes through this way. Why is it happening this way? And then you'll force the doctor to take another test and they'll probably find, yeah, you're absolutely right. This is why that's happening. Because we know our children that way. Because from the day they were born, we inspected every crease in the bottom of their feet, every birthmark, everywhere that they turned their eyes when they were newborns, to how they smelled when they were toddlers. We know that. The only other person that knows them more than you is God, because he made them. So when your child's behavior starts to display some grave changes, something happened. You've got to get to the bottom of it.
And I had a young guy that wanted to call in so bad, but I don't think he was going to be able to, and I can't find him now. But he wanted to share something. I want to share it now, but just in case he calls in, I'm going to hold it. Because, it's just so much that goes on that we don't even get a chance to perceive. However, we should see it, though. We see it now on the YouTube and stuff like that. Like, if we read a little deep into the things we're looking at, it's absolutely crazy. I had to stop some altercation on the middle of the main road near my academic center today. And on the way back from the store, just something random, but they happened to be teenagers that were actually involved in my program. It was one or two of them. It was absolutely mad. You would have thought it was some grown men in 1992. Yeah. So talking about for no reason for real for what it seems like. But, you got type of violent stuff going on and that we could curb because nobody wants to do it. They don't even want to do this to each other in reality.
Ladies and gentlemen, a listener just requested that apparently she was a previous listener with a daughter in this situation. That daughter and her mom, Rebecca and Jenny, just requested that I read a poem I wrote to this topic a few months back because apparently they said it helped them too. So to those of you that are new listeners, to any of you teens that are listening in tonight that are in this situation, to those parents of teens that feel like you don't know what it is that you want to do, maybe, hopefully, these words or this poem will get the message across. It's called I Love You to Death. I wrote it back in August of 2013. And I would like to share this message in it because this was compiled from things that I've seen, experienced, witnessed, and watched go down and read about. And I would like for those of you who are trying to get out of it to see where, when love hurts, what it really means and what it's not. It's called I Love You to Death. It's a tribute to the war against teen dating violence. And it goes like this. My God, this must be heaven, were the words that came to mind. When I saw that look in your eyes when you looked at me as if I was the only person on the lunch line. If only I could make my parents understand, but they just don't want to see. You could have anyone else in the world, and yet you want me. I know that the bruise on my arm looks real bad, but I know that you wouldn't have done that if I didn't somehow make you mad. My parents kept telling me that what we have isn't love, because if we did, there would never be a harsh word exchanged between us, let alone a shove. but they weren't there when you said sorry. They didn't see the way you cried. And if they had any sense at all, they would understand how conflicted you were inside. You went through so much just to get me back. You brought me flowers and apologized on your knees, as a matter of fact. And it was so much better for 3 weeks after we made up that I made a solemn vow to never let anything break us up. You have been by my side everywhere that I go. You even get upset when I went somewhere and you didn't know. You see, I got your back. No one understands you like I do. I could even understand why my eye is black and blue. But what I don't understand is why my parents can't hear me. Why are they sobbing so loudly every time they come near me? And why am I lying flat on my back looking up at a massive crowd, a crowd of almost all my loved ones, and why are they crying so loud? Now I struggle to sit up, and I take a look around. I scream out, it's okay, everybody, I'm fine, but I can't make a sound. And finally it hits me as I catch sight of my name, carved out on a tombstone that reflected from the love from whence it came. Real love captures your heart. The words I love you takes your breath. But real love never hurts you. Love that hurts equals death. That to you, Rebecca, and for you, Jenny. And Jenny, congratulations to you having made it and survived and start thinking more of what is important, and that's you. To you, Megan, who just asked me to read the other thing about someone stuck in the relationship. This one is called I Wish, and I'm praying that this reaches someone else besides you as well. It's called Letter from a Victim, written in October of 2013 by myself. It says, I wish I knew why. I have to figure out this part. Why did you seek me out, pursue me, convince me to trust just to break my heart? Was there a sign on my head that said desperate or kick me? Did I invite you in and hand you the knife that you used to repeatedly stick me? And why did you use God as a front to secure a place in my life, only to fill it with grief, humiliation, and strife? What's missing in your life that makes you so desperate for control? That you make it to your mission to break me apart, the one who loves you, when I made it my mission to keep you whole? When did the light for me in your eyes become so darkened by hate? After promising me a great destiny, you sentenced me to a hellish fate. I gave you my heart as the wind to help you soar, and you fly high over my head while you keep me crawling on the floor. I may never know why you picked me for your game, but I know that for me, love will never be the same. Megan, hopefully that works for you and whoever it is that you're trying to reach. But this is what happens, parents, if you don't understand. Speaking from a victim standpoint, when they get into it, it's hard to get out, because you spend more time really trying to convince yourself that that person who is so full of love for you couldn't possibly be this dark, nasty person. That's one of the reasons why it's hard for them to come out of an abusive relationship. So our job is to make sure they never get so far in that they can't get out, because now they've put themselves in a prison. You spend so much time after that, when they've come to the position of realizing that this indeed is the monster that they are, that you turn around now and say to yourself, now what did I do to make that person lose the delight for me? That could take years on end before you get it. You start excusing bruises because it had to be something you did. We don't want them to ever feel that they could ever be that person. We start making them feel, they start making themselves feel once they get in it, that somebody who gave them so much in the beginning didn't just change overnight, so it had to be something they did. I repeat that because that's the biggest factor. That's why when people ask why the victim stays so long, that's part of it. Other times is that the person that's abusing them has made it to the point where their whole world is controlled by that person, or at least that's what they projected the image to be to this person. We want to make sure that they feel secure at all times. Even when we don't know, it is our job to get to know. Our children usually become strangers by the time they hit the teenage world. We have to get reacquainted. If it means putting our foot down, if it means crying through it at some point, we have to bring them down and we have to bring them back. Bring them down from that high they're on that's leading them to nothing. We got to teach our sons that girls can be just as trifling and abusive, that any girl that's walking around demanding that he gets her things or be around there and then turn around and humiliate him in front of his friends or hurt him in front of his friends is abusive. Girls strike at men too, because most guys who don't believe that they should hit a girl back are perceived as being weak, when that's really who the true men are, or the true men in progress are. That's something that we have to teach them, and that's men and women. Because a man could definitely teach a man how to be a proper man and not hit a girl, while a woman could teach a boy that no real woman acts that way. And ladies and gentlemen, trust me when I tell you that I'm not speaking from this as some third-party gumball machine psychiatrist. I'm speaking to you as a mother and a person who's been through it, who lives it on a daily basis, because there are things I deal with at this moment that I have to keep my tongue short to make sure that my children don't wind up in that by way of example or by way of peer pressure. I'm in it with you. And there's going to be a point in time, if that person gets into that relationship, that their partner is going to be the savior and you're going to be the enemy. So before we get to that point where now we have a triple battle, how do we detect the signs? How do we detect the signs? How do we keep ourselves above it? Well, our days, some of us have to work 3 jobs. We don't have a day off. We don't have a part-time anything. We can't wait until we're eligible for a job vacation for us to be able to say, I'm going to play catch-up. I say that because there's plenty of times that I've had to deal with that situation myself as a single mom. As much as I try my best never to let it be a job that has to be backed up and caught up, it can happen. And our children are being taught by the TV. Even family cartoons now are X-rated or violent-filled. Those of you know, one of the biggest culprit cartoons that are out right now is Family Guy. That has a newborn baby or a toddler kid constantly plotting to kill his mother. Beating up the dog. There was one episode where the dog supposedly owed him money and he was beating and shooting the dog. But this is what the media projects as a reward. That the consequence is not being violent. It's not being out there of acquiring everything you can by way of shutdown and knockdown. We have a fight and a half, parents. And as you said, Deacon, our children are well advanced. But guess what? Yeah. Their advancement, I call that like a pseudo-advancement, because their bodies and their exposure is a lot quicker than their minds and maturity levels are. Just because they know how to pronounce adult words doesn't mean they understand the concept of it. Just because they could play adult games and do bodily things that adults do doesn't mean they understand what comes with it. When you got 7-year-olds not knowing how to stay away from a girl, they're calling their girlfriend. We have issues, people.
Yes.
Deacon, I know you've been a little quiet, but you definitely have a stake in making sure that this awareness gets out there, as well as you, Stalo. So
yes.
What is it, let me start with you, Deacon. What, from the bottom of your heart or the biggest thing you see, do you feel is one of the most common things we need to address and be vigilant with?
Well, I'm going to say this, and this comes from my heart, and I truly do believe this because I've been through so many trials and tribulations in my life. We all have to know that we must keep God first in our lives. If he's not in the equation in your life, you're gonna have problems, and you can't fight this battle on your own. You know, I'm a true believer in prayer. I pray constantly every day. I pray over my children. I pray over my grandchildren. You know, and I pray over friends a lot of times, and I pray for people that I don't even know that I have yet to meet. And if we all get into that state of mind, there's a lot of things that that we run into that we would never run into, that God will help guide us in the right direction. You know, I know we may have some non-believers out here, but I am a walking example and living proof of God's miracles, and he works miracles every day. A lot of people say, well, we read about the miracles that he did in the Bible. Yeah, well, it doesn't stop in the Bible because he's still working miracles every day. And I'm one of his walking miracles because right now, you know, they say that I'm supposed to be paralyzed from the chest down. But I'm able to walk around and do some of the things that I know that he wants me to do. And if we start getting to some of these young people and letting them know that that God loves them and basically our children are a gift from God, and they are from a high priesthood. They have to understand that. If they look at themselves in a positive way instead of in a negative way, instead of listening to some of these words that come, that my opinion comes from the devil. The devil is a master mind trickster. So we have to be equipped every day. You know, I pray over my grandchildren every day before they leave my house. You know, and I think that's very important. It's very important. And that's a lot of things you have going on in the world today is because we as a society today have gotten so far distant from our Lord and Savior that is sad. You know, and he hasn't turned his back on us. We have turned our back on him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with that. And I do believe, as much as we know the racism that's been operating this universe since the beginning of time, that at least it was supposedly founded on our Christian beliefs and faith, and that even with it not just being Christian belief, this country supposedly was formed and created so that other people could come and practice what they believe was their higher power, but it was always founded on some moral higher power belief,
right,
some standard and structure as to what was right and wrong, and
right,
respect for others, and, you know, accountability.
Yeah. You know, I consider myself a non-denominational believer because the word says there's only one God, and I don't care what you call him, there's only one God. And if we all say that we believe in a God, those of us that believe in God, there's only one. You can call him what you want to call him, but he's still God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, indeed. And Stalo, I'm going to pose the same question to you. What do you feel is our biggest need or necessary target in our children for prevention to address and be vigilant about?
I mean, I think, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I think one of the first solutions we need to first address is we are not guiding our children, and we are not equipping them during the time where, during their adolescence, it's a natural thing for human competition. You know, the male-human-male competition, you know, the boxing and the going to the body and all this. We need constructive fighting. We need some gloves and some rings. We need some girls with basketballs, this, that, and the other. And I don't say that to be any type of discriminatory and can't be twisted in any type of way. Why it can't be twisted? I'm talking about boxing. It doesn't matter what you want to do, but we need it constructively done. Right now we have all of this pent-up aggression during adolescence that's being fueled by the media, but we don't have any constructive outlet for it. We're not guiding the children. Now, to combine with what the deacon was saying and what I've been feeling in my heart to allude to is the fact that, you know, we need the guidance like we see in the times before us, biblical times, Bible guidance versus the no guidance of today. Like in the times of, you know, ancient civilizations, we had bloodlines. We children knew somewhat what direction their destiny was going to go. Now we throw them in schools, oh, you're going to be this, you can be that, you can be Lil Wayne, you can be Michael Jordan, You can be Ben Carson. You can be Barack Obama. You know,
sure.
And it's basically that's what we're feeding them all day long. But nothing concerning their household, nothing concerning who their parents are, nothing concerning their bloodline and who they come from, if they're a priestly bloodline, not if they come from, if their ancestors are you know, the forefathers of all civilization versus, you know, what they're seeing on the TV screen. They're not getting the guidance in the knowledge of their own bloodline.
Right.
You know, and as a people, rather than, we are digressing then, you know, rather than some of us and some elements of us, are digressing. Because we're forgetting that we got bloodlines. We can put some boxing gloves on some of these young men, you know, and women as well. We can put some basketball because, you know, you also got to keep in mind soft tissue versus hard tissue, you know, the, you know, hardening of soft tissue kind of, you know, and cancerous, encouraging cancers, growth, woo-hoo-woo-woo, all that type of stuff. So you do what's best for your children and think as much as you can about it, and they think as well. And they'll think just as you do, most likely, you know. So it's nothing. They just need to construct it. And, you know, back in the day when we were growing up, even when the gym burnt down, okay, we had gloves. We put them on, you know. Everybody has a right to live, you know, at the end of the day. And if you want to get something off your chest as a young man, maybe you want to do that, but not if the other person not willing, quote unquote, right? But there needs to be some constructive things to this, because on TV people shoot each other down. There's no right to live, you know. And you know, we have to remember, and I believe, and I hope we can really, really, really remember that we didn't do this. You know, this is not the black way of things for all black young youth, okay? Because we didn't create the American culture, which is overly super violent. We're not the first ones. The first ones was the big bad white man plantation owners, who was the most cruel, who was big bad, you know, peer pressure, and was the bullies of the white men, okay? We didn't do this, okay? It's just trickled down, and it's kind of, you know, it's kind of molded itself and turned into, now we have violence among ourselves because they instill self-hate in us. And so now we glorify violence. We glorify the dude that's the biggest baddest. Yeah, we glorify, you know, the physical strength all day. And we glorify, you know, just determination and willpower and trying to be excellent, yes, all day. But it's not just so you can be out in the streets, you know, banging yourself up and woo-woo-woo. Nah, we're building young men and warriors and soldiers, and there's a certain holiness to this, which we do, anything that you do, even if it's bad, good, or happy.
There are two panelists waiting to come in. Let me bring them in before the time runs out. And I thank you very much for that input. Let me start. I'm going to bring them both in. Just hang on. Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
How you doing, everybody? This is Patrick.
Hey, Patrick.
Hey,
how are you?
Hey, Patrick. What's up, my brother?
Right. How you doing?
Patrick, hang on. There's someone behind you. You'll be the first up, okay? Hold on.
Okay.
Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening, everybody. This is Professor Carl Tone Jones calling live from
Philadelphia. Hey, Professor.
All right, Professor.
Patrick. Well, Patrick, before you get started, please let me let you know that the other night, while I missed your presence, this was Tuesday, I actually celebrated you as our writer of the week, and I'm going to tell you why. The Donald Sterling situation was up before the verdict or the decision came in. And I looked at your YouTube documentary on what you were speaking on with this. And before I even got to look at it, I had already voiced the same exact opinion. But there's so many things that you speak on or that you bring forth, as I say to you, Deacon and Salo and Professor, that are always so deeply rooted and passionate and definitely progressive in teaching and in awareness. And that particular, I guess, viewpoint that you had really was deep. So I actually celebrated you on the show for that day. So thank you for that, just to let you know.
Yes, well deserved.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, what do you feel about tonight? Teen violence is, what do you feel that tonight is about us being able to detect it? What do you think the signs could be? And what do you think the reasons or the factors of our children actually being lured into abusive relationships could be?
I think when it comes to some of the reasons, I think a lot of them would stem from emotional insecurities or some sort of emotional instability. And I can't even say that because I think the reasons are numerous is what I'm getting at. I think most of them stem from an emotional place, but you still have to look at it from the level of you could be very emotionally balanced and run into somebody that appears to be emotionally balanced. And before you know it, you're wrapped up in a situation that isn't what you bargained for. It's a very destructive situation for you.
Right.
Now, you know, the emotionally balanced person you would like to believe would just check out of that situation as soon as it occurs, but that's an oversimplification of the process. It's not always that easy, even for the most well-balanced person, once they're in that situation, to get out for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned earlier, Katie, and even to the point of things that we can see, what we can recognize to deal with the situation. I used to mentor at a teen center, and it was my first time really talking to teenage girls that had gone through violence and some of the women that had gone through the violence that were mentoring those girls and hearing their stories. And one of the only things that was always said and that I believe to be true that you could tell as a sign, because the signs weren't always verbal, a lot of the times somebody, it would be like almost like a depression type symptoms, like personality shifts. A person would used to be outgoing, all of a sudden they're more withdrawn. You know, or it could be the exact opposite. A person was withdrawn and not always outgoing. But for the most part, it seemed like the signs were only really visible to people that really knew the people. So for the parents, for the best friends, for the people that are around these people a lot, it's really important for them to be able to recognize any type of shift or any type of thing that's out of the normal and discuss that with that person. And I think in the discussions, you can gain a lot of insight as to what's happening without even asking them directly what's going on, which works for some people and for others it doesn't. My first time mentoring a young lady who had gone through a situation like that, I asked her what was up and she sat down on me. You know, wrong course of action for this particular individual. So it's a really delicate and complex thing to deal with, and that's why I was hesitant to call in, because it's really something that people just have to pay attention. What the deacon spoke to earlier about spiritual guidance is necessary because, you know, we are spiritual beings. We are spiritual beings occupying a flesh or a physical body. And if you don't nourish that spirit, then that spirit is prone to get the physical body in the situations that are not beneficial for either the spirit or the physical body, because the spirit is seeking nourishment. Right. And when the spirit is seeking nourishment, the spirit is going to get that nourishment from somewhere. You can't contain a hungry spirit. It's going to get what it's hungry for. So you have to ask yourself, is what the spirit is consuming beneficial for the spirit in the body? And in a lot of the cases, you find out that it isn't. It's coming with a heavy price. The same thing with emotions. I think parents nowadays, we're so busy. We're trying to do so much. And like you said, your kids become strangers as teenagers.
Right.
And it's a big problem nowadays with mom and dad, both, and a lot of families having to work two jobs to survive. The kids are home alone. not getting attention, not because the parents are bad, but because the parents don't have, they don't make time for the children. And in a lot of cases, they just don't have the time to make. And so the child grows up wanting, and all of a sudden now the child is a teenager, hormones are raging, the child is in a position to feel like it is mature enough to make decisions in its best interest, and the very first thing it does is, as we go back to the spirit, the very first thing it does is seek to fill itself on what it feels like is lacking. And, you know, when you meet up, when you're a spirit that starts, and you meet up with another spirit that starts, the connection can be powerful. And that's that strong sense of love that it seems like a lot of them have. And, of course, I'm speaking from a third party. I've never been in that situation, so I'm talking from talking to these girls and these boys who have been in situations where they were hitting women or abusing women, as well as situations where women were abusing the boys. But the connection was powerful. And that powerful connection was caused, in my opinion, by two spirits that were both desiring something heavily that they found in each other. But the problem was there was no balance. There was no thought to the long-term cost. There was no emotional maturity in the situation. And so when two things that are heavily bound together meet up with a rift, they clash, and they clash hard. And without any type of emotional stability or any type of other means of letting out that outlet without even having the knowledge to find some other way to let out that outlet, you get what you get. You get people that lash out violently. You know, they feel that type of way. And so, you know, I really think it's important as parents and as friends, we need to find a way to make time for our children. We need to find a way. We don't need to find a way. I'm a big fan of throwing out TVs because, as you said earlier, the messages the kids are getting through televisions are toxic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a big fan of throwing out the TV, a big fan of throwing away the TV. I'd rather my children read books all day than watch TV all day.
Yeah, there you go.
Absolutely.
So that's just me. I don't want to take up all the time from Professor because I know he's going to drop a lot of knowledge. But I've been listening to the conversation, and you guys have definitely been killing it. And I do appreciate the shout-out from Tuesday. I listened to the show on replay, and I walked around smiling and skipping all day.
Well, you make me smile when you say that, Patrick. I do need to speak with you after the show. It's really important. The same goes for you, Professor. When we're done with tonight is a little thing that I need you guys help with on a mission, okay? Professor, mm-hmm. You're up. You're up, darling.
Okay. So when we look at the situation with our teen and the violence that they have in terms of expression of one another, you know, we have to deal with the roots of the anger. And a lot of times we get caught up dealing with the after effects or as you know, it's like when you're dealing with a cough or a cold. You know, we like to deal with the cough. We don't want to know where the cough is coming from.
Right.
So, you know, when we deal with our children, we have to recognize that a lot of times our children are coming from places of anger, where they've witnessed some heinous things in their childhood. They've witnessed abuses and so forth. You know, a lot of our children, unfortunately, are the result of teenage pregnancies themselves. So you have a teenager raising children who has not yet lived and experienced life. So there's resentment there already within the home, and the child hasn't even learned how to walk or talk yet. So you have a lot of those issues, and then you have single-parent issues, so you see inappropriate dating techniques and things of that such inside the homes because you see what the boys see what men the mom likes and things and how they treat the mother and so forth. The girls see the men the mom likes and how she treats them. And unfortunately, in a lot of these situations, be it for whatever reason, dad is not in the picture to help righten or balance this ship. So you have a lot of anger there and a lot of anger because dad is not there. So you have a lot of our children who, when they start to assume relationships, they're already assuming it with anger, embedded anger, almost sort of like dealing with a trauma that's not been dealt with. So similar to how we deal with post-traumatic stress syndrome as a community, well, the children are dealing with all these unbridled emotions that they can't really fathom or figure out where they come from. So they have the wrong images embedded in them based on the media outlets, and they have this anger on top of all of that. And what you get is a toxic mix. And when these children get together, you have the emotions, and now specifically with boys who are hyper-aggressive in the teenage years due to their boost in testosterone and so forth and all these other chemicals that are involved in our upbringing, that, you know, a lot of factors lead to them being out of control. And there's nobody to check these boys because it's similar to, and it's something I was watching Dr. Umar talk about, Dr. Umar Johnson, he was talking about how when there's no man in the house, unwittingly, normally the oldest male assumes the role of the father or assumes that male partnership role with the mother, not in a monogamous way where they have a relationship, but in terms of roles and responsibilities. So you take that person, and now you take that person and you give them that type of authority, and there's nobody to check him. You know,
right.
If it was a situation where you are dating my daughter, then you have the traditional situations. I'm not sure if anybody remembers the movie Players Club. When Jamie Foxx was trying to act, when he was asking one of the dancers, her name was Diamond inside the movie. I can't remember her name, but she was Diamond, and he went to the house to date her, and he had to pick her up, and he had to meet her father. Now, it was a funny scene where the father took him out back, and he showed him all of his guns, and it was pretty much one of those things where Jamie Foxx knew, if I step out of bounds, dad is going to tear fire to my ass. Well, there's nobody to tear fire to these young brothers' asses if they step out of bounds or they get too aggressive now. And then when you have the media push the songs, like I can remember growing up in here, with MC Light, with I Want a Rough Neck, Gotta Have a Rough Neck, and then, you know, the whole genre has pushed towards that abusive behavior and so forth. People embed that, and especially teens who don't know how to interact, don't know how to take that information in. I mean, adults struggle with taking that information in. So when you have teenagers who are struggling with taking that information in, and they subconsciously take that information in, what happens is they take that information in, and now the result is abusive situations and relations. And let's not overlook the fact that as a society, we don't love who we are. And that desire to get that out of the system, we meet people, we think they're going to make us feel better, make us feel better about ourselves, and then when we meet them and we don't feel better about ourselves and we don't feel better about ourselves in their presence, now they're the problem. So now we have that vulgar language going back and forth, that vulgar disposition going back and forth, and it feeds into the whole unnecessary cycle. And then you have the physical abuse, because the verbal abuse often permeates to the physical abuse. So there we have all those situations wrapped up in the one. So the first thing if we're talking about results and we're seeking results, we need to teach our children how to love who they are. We need to instill in them the principles, the how beautiful they are, how smart and intelligent they are. We need to reinforce that. We need to start investing more time into them instead of into materials. I agree with Patrick, who said we need to get them away from the television and so forth, because they are having a misguided representation of who they are based on the people that are flashed in front of them on the TV screen. I mean, you look at Rihanna today, and a lot of the girls love Rihanna, and now she's all over the internet with naked pictures. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you look at Beyonce, and now all of a sudden Beyonce went to the pretty girl next door singing joyful, beautiful songs people want to dance to. So now all of a sudden, you know, she's raunchy here, she's bossy here. You know, it's like this transformation, and these are the images that affect our children every day. And when our young ladies see that, damn, I need to be a slut in order to get my Jay-Z, I need to be a slut in order to get the man of my dreams, now they're dehumanizing themselves. And you end up with 13- and 14-year-olds on the internet doing twerk videos on football fields with men blowing whistles and orchestrating the entire event.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Speaking of, when you mentioned Beyonce, you know, well, you guys know my position on Jay-Z and the situation, but one of the songs that she sang before she became this, I don't know, this outrageous sex, whatever, there was a song with some lyrics in it, and I'm trying to remember which one it was, where it had the woman, the female, speaking of how she does it right because she keeps it tight for him, and she's talking about keeping her body together or doing whatever. Nothing wrong with that for those of you gentlemen out there going, what's wrong with you trying to keep it together? But understand that, you know, you're not going to get Cindy Crawford after 5 kids. Or whatever the case is. And the best you could do is try to keep yourself as fit as possible. I'm not saying go over and start looking like, you know, the basket fruit lady with the homemaker dress down to the bottom or do whatever. But it's these type of lyrics that our young girls are saying or seeing, or because this is what the person of the week said we have to do. I spoke about the Grand Theft Auto series. One of the things that, Deacon, you always mention is the strongest muscle our kids have on their bodies today is their thumbs, because I have a battle right now with my 13-year-old. It's like the minute that he comes in from school, drop the bag, let's hit the controllers. The minute that his eyes wake up, don't hit the toothbrush, hit the joysticks, you know, and it's like they are dead set on making that next level, accomplishing all those feats and rewards that this video game put out. And like I said, Grand Theft Auto gets me most because they are promoting mafia activity, gun violence. The more people you run over, the better you are, the more gangster and thuggish you are. This is what the media, the video games, the family cartoons, all of these things are. Everything's promoting violence. Powerpuff Girls. And I love that show. You know, all of the cartoons are, if you can remember when we grew up, yes, our cartoons were violent, but they were violent in such a comedic way that we still had room as people to say, yeah, that's just cartoons, that's stupid. Nowadays, the way they create these scenes, these kids have a hard time deciphering that it's not true or that it's just entertainment. So if they're seeing these cartoons that are out there and they're heroes or the superheroes because they're pounding a person, you know, to death with 160 punches in a second, or they're picking up women and they're knocking them on the floor and nobody is sacred anymore and nothing is a limit anymore, what are they going to grow up to when it comes to dealing with everybody in their life? Not only that, Professor, you brought up the gangster song. I don't remember what you know, didn't hear too closely what you said, but I know I've seen grown men that walk around thinking that lyric was strong. You know what I'm saying? I've seen grown men repeating Drake when he was talking about who the F are y'all. I think it's called Fall, it's over, the song Over. And I'm seeing grown men like, yeah, who the F are y'all? You know what I'm saying? Like my boy Drake. Now, how in the hell are our kids going to understand that it's stupid? That this is what these guys are doing to make money, that they're probably not half as strong as their lyrics are in a real fight. Let's not forget that they have music videos that have the movie scene of, you know, gangster fights in the club where the singer, you know, got away with shooting everybody down, then broke out into dance.
Yeah.
How are kids getting this? I think Usher has one with, what is it? What's the name of that song where he goes and rescues his girl from a club? He's dressed up like the 1950s, you know, gangster club. What is it? And I actually like the song. Caught Up. That's the song. And he's out there killing everybody down, rescuing this girl from a burning club, and then he comes outside and they start dancing. Michael Jackson with, You rock my world. So these younger kids are going out going, yeah, that's how you do it. Just grab her and knock a man out. No.
Yeah, they're missing the point. A lot of them think just because you put syrup on it, don't make it pancakes.
Wow, yeah, Deacon, perfect analogy. Here's the other thing. Since tonight is about us parents and us adults and village people, how do we stop it? How do we determine what's going on? Well, first, let's do the most important thing and look at whether or not what they're seeing is coming from us. Moms, have you, like you said, Professor, single moms dating different men, have these men been able to come in and desecrate what's sacred and what's the wall, the line, the boundaries from her children, her household, her rules to this person? Or is this man coming in to compliment or uplift or support what she's already saying by showing her kids, especially her sons, that I'm never going to put my hands on your mom, and I agree with what she's saying because it's going to develop your character? And what about us women that sitting there being abused and taking it? What about us men that are walking around showing abuse or taking abuse? There's been plenty of henpecked, badly henpecked males. Because she might be the prettiest woman in school, and I'm speaking from a teen standpoint. She might be the prettiest girl in school. He might be have deemed himself as the biggest nerd in the school who could never get this prettiest girl in school. And for whatever her reasons are, which may not be on the level, she found something in him that will benefit her, and she uses him to that. Or maybe as pretty as she is, she really is not as secure as people who see her beauty perceive her to be. So she got this one person that's showing us some true, genuine affection, and she's using that. We have to stop giving women in society the softer sex defense. Because let me explain this to you. What we lack in physical ability, we double up in mental capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And men are just as badly abused by women as women are men at times. Physically, no, because no matter how skinny a man is, God designed men to be physically superior, period. No matter how many taekwondo classes you take, no matter how many boxing rings you take, you might be able to self-defense, but when the push comes to shove, at the end of the day, if he really wants to.
Mm-hmm.
And
you
it's
know,
not a thing of weakness, ladies. Mm-hmm, Dad, what are you saying?
You know, the interesting part about that is, you know, and I was having a conversation with your sister earlier today, and we were talking about some of the issues, the permeating issues, and dealing with teens. It's ironic, we were talking about the teens in our community. And one of the things she was saying is, it's just, you know, what it really comes down to is before we establish the community, before we establish all that, we got to teach our people how to love each other. And we have to start with our children, because if we start with the adults, well, the adults have been hating who they are since the day they were born. So I don't expect the adults to change their ways. It's like you can't really teach an old dog new tricks. You know, he might learn it eventually, but they'll still go back to the old habits and things of that nature, because we're creatures of habit. But we have to start teaching our children about how to love themselves and how to respect themselves and the traits in society that don't necessarily cater to them, because they're catered to a condition or a population that is not them. We have to bring the native and the root and our ancestry back to where we are recognized as the most beautiful creatures and specimens on the planet, where we're the most dynamic engineers and creators of all time. And, you know, if these things that we deal with, you know, we're dealing with a system of white supremacy where our children try to measure themselves up to that. And if anybody needs to be reminded, you know, Donald Sterling reminded everybody that it doesn't matter how much you've accomplished, you know, if you're black, I still don't consider you my equal. I still am not 100, not 150, you know, in terms of the comparison that he made towards Magic Johnson or anybody that was black, in terms of whether black Jews or white Jews were equal on equal status. So, you know, that mindset is powerful, because he spoke of a culture. Now, that culture that he spoke about is the culture we live in. But a lot of people like to pretend that we don't live in it. So I was glad that he said it, because black people don't believe anything until a white man says it. So now you heard it from a white man. So he actually... that was probably a godsend that tape broke, came out. And for all the reasons right. that's not publicized, is because he finally broke it clear, made it clear, and made it plain that this society is created to be a benefactory of white supremacy. So when we teach our children, we have to teach our children that they cannot ascribe to the qualifications of white supremacy, because they will always come up short, and they will end up resenting who they are and end up hating who they are because they can never accomplish the goal of honorary white status. You know, they can never accomplish the, not honorary white, but full-term white status. They can never accomplish their goal, and that's what they're being taught in schools. The school where the history is not being taught. I'm actually having a debate right now with a white supremacist who doesn't know that she's a white supremacist. You know, right now, okay, as we speak. I'm surprised you didn't hear keyboard chatter. I think I'm muting my phone in between. But bottom line is, you know, we are in a system of white supremacy that teaches our children that if they don't raise or live to the standards of white supremacy, then they're not successful, that they're failures. If they don't ascribe to what's considered beautiful in white supremacy, then they're ugly, they're not attractive. And then our girls are going out getting perms and weaves, and now our girls are going out and getting blonde hairs and eyelashes and all these different Euro trends, trying to live up to the beautiful, to the whole thing, and you know, the whole stigma of what is considered beautiful based on white supremacy. Then we talk about the academics. All of our children in high school are pushed to sports because they're told that's the only way they can succeed in life. So now our children don't believe they can be academics in school. So now you have that caveat thrown in their face because they're learning a history that's not theirs, and they know it, so they're rejecting it. They're rejecting the teaching style because the teaching style is not the teaching style that's familiar with bringing and breeding the best out of our children. So until we take these situations and we put our foot in those situations and we turn our children and teach them the way they're supposed to be taught and educate them about themselves and educate them about their past and educate them about the brilliance that they have within them and educate them about the bright light that is their future. Until we give them all of that, we can't expect any changes with our children. So we have to go through that route and explain to them, break down the stigma of white supremacy within our community, because we are no longer ascribing to their standards.
And with that, Professor, I want to go one step deeper back. If we don't start teaching our children first and foremost that, A, they are worth everything, and that comes from the parents, and B, if they have to measure themselves by other people's expectations or desires or what other people think is good or bad, they're never going to be able to measure up. If they are defining themselves by what other people define measurements to be, they're never going to measure up. So they won't even be able to understand it from the white supremacy, black supremacy, whatever, if they first don't understand it as humans. And that's the one thing that you said, that's one of the things you said tonight with regards to, you know, that they're starting to try to match up to what the media is showing or what that perfect person out there is or what the Beyoncés of the world are. If we don't start telling our daughters that you are not property to be beat up on or shared in a bad way or manipulated, if we don't start teaching our sons that it's not about you being rough and rude or controlling or abusive to be a man, if we don't start saying that everybody's equal to a point, to listen, to think, that they're equal in being human, that they're equal in speech and opinion, and that if you don't agree with what a woman says, you don't have the right to strike her. And that's coming from our own way of handling things ourselves, be it their fathers or their mothers or be it new people in our life. They're never going to be able to have a foot to stand on when they leave us. And that's not just leaving the nest. I'm speaking leaving your house, period. Because on a daily basis, we have to trust our children to another organization altogether for 8 hours of their life.
You know what? A lot of that goes to what the professor is always talking about, us developing a code of conduct. When you start talking about parents, single mom, and how she deals with the new man and how the new man is coming in, how teenagers deal with each other in relationships, and essentially taking it a step further in my beliefs, that code of conduct essentially creates the standard and creates the community And that's something that I think we as adults should be working towards. There are a lot of things that only there are a lot of things where the only things we can do are prepare our children and hope they pick up the ball and run with it. But this is one of the things that I feel like we as the adults in this generation can actually start building right now, because it's something that our children can't do. Our children can't develop a code of conduct. That's their parents' job, and that's our job as parents in the community, in the group, in the collective, to decide whether it be neighborhood by neighborhood, block by block, street by street, what's tolerable and what's not tolerable in this area and how we're going to deal with violations. I mean, you know, a community should do three things for its people. It should protect its people, it should provide for its people, and it should give its people a voice. And when I say provide for its people, that's just not physically, that's also spiritually, and that's also mentally educational, providing things to stimulate the mind. And those are things that I feel like we can do that do address the issue we're having of our young teenagers getting involved in situations that are violent or toxic to them, and even our young adults getting in situations that are toxic to them. Those are things we can do right now. When you talk about developing a code of conduct and you talk about let's start building our community, we can start building the community right now and hope that when our children come of age, they'll see the efforts that we're putting into this. And for some of us, our children are young enough where we can begin instilling it in them right now.
Right.
They can see that. Yeah. They can pick the ball up and they can run with it. And maybe by the time I'm an old man, the black community will be in such a great place, and I can look back and I can say, I remember when 75% of our children were growing up in single-parent homes, and I remember when, you know, we were 40% of the poverty population, and I remember when 4.5% of the black males, 4.5% of the population being black males were over 25% of the inmate population. I remember all those things, and all those are things of the past. I remember when black women were attacking black men, and black men were attacking black women, and you know, everybody was getting beat up, either mentally, physically, spiritually, or emotionally, or verbally. You know, none of that stuff happens now. I remember, and they can all look at me and say, really? That used to happen? We used to be that way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Guys, we're down to our last 6 minutes, so I want to thank you. My God, this is my full power panel right here. Stalo, Deacon, thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Professor, for all that you guys consistently do. People hear you here, they don't know just how much you are doing out there. And we have already on this panel come to the consensus that while we can't reach them all, we at least are able to advocate for most. And that's a big chunk out of where we were. So as long as we are aware and we are continuously upset and we're not going to sit down and take it, I guess for right now, we're the workhorse. But to you teens out there, and to you parents of teens out there, and to you domestic violent victims and abusers in the adult world, understand this. You as the older generation in this mess, if it's conflicting for you, if it's difficult for you, and we're adults who should have ideas about what to do, try to think of just how much more of a tragedy it is to teens that's still dealing with raging hormones, with identity crisis. We're trying to mirror what they see. We're trying to be sponges and copycats. We're trying to figure out what it means to be in control and what it means to be real men and women when they're not even men and women yet. Our job is to be the detectives and the preventers. Whether or not we are in it, whether or not we are messing up, we have to acknowledge that to them and to ourselves so that we can all fight this battle together. To your teens, here's a very big understanding that you must get in your head. If you are claiming to be in love, if that person is claiming to love you, and you have to alter, change yourself, be something different, step up to the plate and do all the work first. If you are hurting physically or otherwise on a constant basis, if you are in fear of your life, to breathe.
without that person say so. If you can't go to the park, to the mall, to get your makeup on, to pick out a dress without his or her approval, or have a life to yourself without him wondering or her wondering where you've been, it's not love. If you can't be trusted and you can't trust, you're already off from a bad start. And do understand, love is not meant to hurt. So if it hurts, it's not love. Get out of it while you can. Parents, keep this fight up while as long as you have to. Fight until something happens, because I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't, they're dead already. So until tomorrow night with part two of this, part two is going to focus on now that you know, what do we do? I thank you all and those listeners who are listening in and didn't call in. I hope that this brought you some progress, or it's something that gave you some interest and it's progressive for you, because we're definitely trying here. So until tomorrow night, everyone, be blessed. Be a blessing. Make a difference. Teens, listen to your parents, because they've been there, done that. Parents, be parents, because if you don't, you've lost them. Till tomorrow night, everybody, be blessed. Be a blessing. God bless. Good night.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.